Thank you for having me, and I feel like I have to start with a thank you because we're going to this. Can everybody hear me? Oh my gosh. Everybody can hear me? Is that everyone good? All right, so I wanted to discuss something that many people think is overplayed. You know, last week was Thanksgiving. We are a few weeks away from Yimei Halil Vahodah, Thanksgiving of Hanukkah, which is sort of our Thanksgiving. But I can't speak about this topic enough. I talk about it all the time. The reason I talk about this topic all the time is because from everything and everything I'm going to show you, it seems to be probably the most critical idea in all of Yahadus. And not only that is it the most critical idea, but it's the one thing that, like, whether you're Jewish or not Jewish, whether you're religious, you're into God, you're not into God, you're an atheist, it doesn't really matter. It seems to me that people who are good at this media that we're going to talk about actually live much better lives than everybody else. So it doesn't really matter if you're into this because it's like from or because it's part of your Avodas Hashem, all good stuff. But if you're going to get into this idea of thank you, this idea of gratitude, and we're going to see how incredibly pervasive it is in Yiddishkeit, but if you are into this, you will change your life. And I'm going to give you some stories and some examples and some research, and hopefully you'll believe me. And if you do, I just hope your life will be changed, because it's changed mine. I've been focusing on this idea for years. And it comes from this idea of, I don't know, positive psychology. You guys know what that is, positive psychology? Yeah, so if anybody has taken a course in positive psychology, nobody? So negative psychology, nobody calls it that. That's regular psychology. So that's like when, I don't know, you have normal, this is normal, okay? And then you or me, let's say me, okay, not you, me, I'm over here. So I see somebody in order to be able to allow me to get back up to the norm, to normal psychology. That's generally how we perceive the industry. And then there's positive psychology, that works differently. With that, the normal is here, but there are certain people living up here. And what they're doing seems to be so special and so amazing that we just want some of that. And so there are people who sit and research what it is that brings those people so far beyond the norm. And if we could figure out what they have that we do not, and perhaps we can enjoy ourselves a little bit better. And so that is, I believe, one of the energizing ideas behind why we talk about gratitude, why we talk about a person's hope. But we're going to do a share, and we're going to look to Marmakoma. So we're going to talk about it the classic way. But first, does anybody recognize the picture on the top left of this page? You do? Okay. Just anybody read that book as a child? The Giving Tree? Michelle Silverstein? I gotta admit, I used to read this book to my kids when they were, going to sleep bedtime. I still do. But every single time I read it, it bothered me. It really, really bothered me, this book. Of course, you probably know the story. If you don't know the story, I'll just tell it really quickly. There's this boy, and this boy grows up, and he's hanging around a tree a lot. And he's hanging around with his girlfriend. He writes his girlfriend's name and his name and a heart on the tree. And then things go sour for the kid, and then he starts kneading and relying on the tree, and the tree gives him its fruits, and then the tree gives him the branches, and then the tree literally gives the trunk, and every single time the kid at different stages of his life takes from the tree, walks away, leaves, and amazingly doesn't say thank you. And whenever I read this book to my kid, I would always say that, and then the boy took the branches and said thank you and left. And that's not what the book is about. The book is about like somebody taking, and something giving everything of themselves. But there's something really troubling about it, and it should be jarring when you read that book. The fact that there is no thank you, there's no gratitude for the fact that this tree literally gave its everything to the boy, to the man, to the adult. There's no thank you there. So let's see how critical it is. Some of this stuff is so well known, some of this stuff is not less well known. Well, let's start at the beginning. Source one, we have the basic introduction that God offers to the Jewish people. What's God's resume? What's on his calling card? So, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God. You know this introduction. Ma'ayin har Sinai, Asher hotzei sicha me'eretz Mitzrayim, who took you out of Egypt. Now, that's impressive. It really, it truly is impressive. God took us out of Egypt, the Ten Makos. We know the story. We interact, we react, we replicate it every single year. But as a matter of fact, God has done more impressive things. We believe that God created the universe. I mean, that's pretty amazing. God created the Egypt for us to be in, for us to then miraculously save from. So why doesn't God introduce himself, I'm the creator of the universe? Says the Ramban in the second source, very simple. the reason that we are introduced to God, and he introduced himself to us as I am the one who took you out of Egypt, is simply because Shehein Chayavin Sheyehei Hashem HaGadol VaHanechbad VaHanora HaZeh LaHem Elokim. You are literally, you people individually, are obligated to respond to this. You know, the fact that I created the universe, okay, that's like a theoretical concept, it's something which I technically do live in the universe. And so technically I am one of your creations. I get that. But this idea that I literally just took you out of Egypt, that is the most basic level of responsibility that we have to react. The gratitude that we are supposed to have for what was done for us, that is the number one calling card that God finds worthwhile to share in this introduction. I took you out of Egypt like 49 days ago, and we just went through this experience together. You know what I have done for you. That is the number one motive to get involved, to respond to this introduction that God offers to us. In the second, in number three, we have Shavuos Perek Beis, famous name Moshe. Moshe is called Moshe. Why is Moshe called Moshe? We all know this. We're going to read this in a few weeks. Moshe is called Moshe because Min Hamayim Nishisiru. Vidya Basharo, she is in the water and she sees Moshe. It was so grateful. Great, great, great job she did. Her arm extended, whatever. She picks up Moshe and she raises Moshe. So kind, so nice, so generous. But then there's this fantastic message in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Because we know that Moshe is called a variety of things. The Medrash actually lists 10 different names that Moshe has. Now, Moshe has names because of like his career. He does amazing things. You know, he's a slugger. He does remarkable things throughout his life. And so he gets these names that people call him because of the wonderful things he's done, career that he has had. And yet, he's called Moshe, which kind of just means like the kid that got drawn. Thank you. The kid that got drawn. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The kid who got drawn out of the water. Why is that name significant? Says the Medrash something remarkable. Listen to this. Source 4. Vayikra Rab. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God says to Moshe, listen to this. Chayecha. By your life. Mikol Shemo Shenikra Lecha. From all of the names that are called. All of the names. They remind people how inspiring a career you've had. The connection that you have with me, God says. Of all of the names that were given to you, I am going to call you B'shem Shekaraska Bisya Basparo. I am going to call you the name that you were named by this young Egyptian woman who I don't even really get how she spoke Hebrew. V'tikra Shemo Moshe. She calls him Moshe. V'yikra El Moshe. And so Sefer V'yikra begins with what? God calling out to this man, Moshe. Meaning you might say Sefer Shemos, that was just the name that he was referred to as by people because he was named this. But in V'yikra, God's the one calling to Moshe. God's the one calling him Moshe. And so why Moshe, says the Medrash? Because God was saying thank you to the daughter of God. Thank you for saving my little Maishola. Thank you so much. And so this Mida V'akaris HaTov, this attribute, this incredible connection to gratitude. It's not like only God's calling card, like the very first thing he says when he introduces himself to the Jewish people. But it is something that God, I don't really exactly know what this means. God has himself. God has gratitude to us for the things that we do, or at least displays gratitude to us for the things that we do. Now there's some shocking applications of this. I'll show you in a moment. But first you got to take a look at what's on the bottom right. The bottom right is a box which, if you learn nothing else, just read what it says over here. Read a book like this. This is by an author named Robert A. Emmons. He wrote a book called Thanks, and all of his books have exclamation points at the end. So like, I wasn't just being really exciting on the bottom. They actually all have exclamation points in their titles. So gratitude works! And he wrote a book called Thanks! That's the book that this guy writes. And in this book, he talks about not only methodologies and how to develop more gratitude, how to look at the world in a more grateful way, but he talks about the benefits of doing so. Like, you have a lot of books which are self-help books and describe different avenues towards living a better life, and they don't have a lot of research behind them. You just get a sense that if I do this, I'll live a little bit better. But I just want to show you the research over here, and I'm going to read it really, really quick. So consider these eye-popping statistics. People are 25% happier if they keep gratitude journals. Does anybody do that? Keep a gratitude journal? Where'd you get that idea? get 25% happier if they keep gratitude journal, sleep 1.5 hour more per evening, and exercise 33% more each week compared to people who are not keeping these journals. Hypertensives can achieve up to a 10% reduction in systolic blood pressure, and we'll tell me what that is later, and decrease their dietary fat intake by up to 20%. Experiencing gratitude leads to increased feelings of connectedness, improved relationships, and even altruism. We have also found that when people experience gratitude, they feel more loving, more forgiving, and closer to God. I put that underline there because I'm a rabbi. Dozens of research studies with diverse participant groups have also revealed that the practice of gratitude leads to the following. Are you ready? Increased feelings of energy, alertness, enthusiasm, and vigor. Success in achieving personal goals. Better coping with stress. A sense of closure in traumatic memories. Bolstered feeling of self-worth and self-confidence. Solidified and secure social relationships. Generosity and helpfulness. Prolonging of the enjoyment produced by pleasurable experiences. Improved cardiac health through increases in vagal tone. I have no idea what that is. Greater sense of purpose and resilience. I don't know what gratitude doesn't do after reading this list. I don't know how it's not going to make your life like this most amazing thing. And by the way, you're welcome. You're welcome. Because showing you all this, I hope, will inspire you to focus on this thing, sheer notwithstanding, just stop listening right now. Just take this little marabuffa, this little corner box, as evidence of how important it is to figure out, and we'll talk about this soon, how to figure out how to write down your gratitude. Keep this journal, whatever that is, but in general, to be a grateful person. Now, there are, of course, different types of grateful. I used to have students where I taught in high school, different kinds. So the kinds who, like, always said thank you. And who here says thank you after class? There are students who always say thank you at the end of the class. You're one of them, too. Always say thank you at the end of class. And that just, it almost seemed to me to be like reflexive. It wasn't really thought out. They went, oh, that was a particularly inspiring lesson, Rabbi. It wasn't that. It was just sort of, you know, thank you. Just what I do as I stand up and I walk out. And I always, like, discounted that. And then I changed my mind. I totally changed my mind. You're going to see why. So take a look at the bottom left. And I'm sorry if I'm going fast, but we don't have that much time together. On the bottom left, we have source 5, which shows her babies. Moshe, we know, runs away from Egypt. That's we're going to read about that in Parashat Shmos. So he runs away from Egypt because he kills him. He kills a man in defense of another Jew, and he feels like, you know, he's got to escape. And so he escapes. Turn the page to the top of page 2. And who shelters him? So first he hangs out at the well, and he meets a couple of girls, because that's where they hang out these days, and he meets a couple of girls, and he helps them, and so they invite him back home. You know, maybe we could do something to eat, maybe we could take care of you. And indeed, the father, Yisro, of these girls says, please, you know, where's this guy? Go get him, all right? So finally, the pasuk says, Vayelech Moshe, top of page 2, Vayoshev al Yisro chosna, Vayomer lo el chana v'ashuva el achai. I'm going to go back to my brethren, because I just had this whole encounter, at a bush. It was burning. It was amazing. And God came to me, and God said, I want you to go and see the Jewish people. It's time. Go. And God, Moshe responds, and he doesn't say yes. And you know the whole discussion in Shmos, I hope maybe you've read it. And he doesn't say yes right away. And there are a bunch of reasons that are offered why he does not say yes. Like, why does he not just go and do it? But you probably never saw this one. Look at the Medrash Tanchumim, source 7. Why doesn't Moshe say, oh, listen to you, God, the creator of the universe? Sure. Oh, listen to you, God, and save the Jewish people? Of course. I'm in. Let's go. Here's what he does. Vayelech Moshe, source 7, Vayeshem al Yisro chosno, uv'shasha amar le'akadosh baruch hu l'Moshe, when God tells Moshe, v'yata enel v'chodesh l'chacha al paro, I'm going, I'm sending you to paro. Amar le'Moshe, Moshe says, hold on. Can't do it. Ribon ha'olam. Ini yachal. I can't do it. I just can't go. I cannot go and do the job that you want me to do. Do you want me to go right now? I can't. Because Yisro took me in. Yisro gave me shelter. Yisro took care of me. Who pasach li as pesach beso. He opened the door of his home to me. And I am like a son to this man. And somebody who does that for me, somebody who does that for another person, I literally owe him my life. So hold on, God. I know you're the creator of the universe. I know you have a mission for me. That's all good and well. I know you want me to save my brethren, all of the Jewish people. I'm sorry, I can't. I have to go check in with the person that I owe everything to. I owe him a thank you. I owe him a little bit of Kodesh Hatov. Maybe I should have a conversation with him. And so when the pasuk says, Moshe goes to Yisro Chosno, the Medrash is explaining, he goes sort of to check with him. So I got this job. Is it okay if I go take it? Because he has to check in with this person because it's overwhelming sense. I owe him. I owe Yisro something. There's a very well-known prohibition. Moab and Ammon, you're not allowed to marry a boy from Ammon and Moab. That leads to the Shidduch crisis. I'm kidding. It's not the, there's no such thing. And Ammon and Moab is not the problem. But you're not allowed to marry a boy from Ammon and Moab. You're allowed to marry women from Ammon and Moab. Why? Because the Torah tells us, the Torah says in source 8, because al devar asher lo kidnu eschep alechem uvamayim, they did not come and give the Jews water and bread when they were just passing by. They just needed a drink. They just needed something to eat. And Ammon and Moab was not going to help the Jewish people. That's pretty bad. It's pretty rude. It's pretty rude. It's obnoxious. You know, you're walking down the street and there's somebody there and you're obviously very thirsty and you're famished and somebody does not offer you what you think you should be offered. So the Torah responds to that. Then it says, Los idrosh shlomam v'tobosam kol yamecha le'olam. Do not seek their peace or their welfare. Do not marry into them, as the pasuk says. It seems a little bit harsh. And yet, you might say, maybe the Torah is pretty sensitive to these things. It's sensitive to those who don't do kindnesses to the Jewish people. But take a look at the next pasuk. It's sort of say, pasuk ches on the bottom. Los sa'eve domik yachichahu. Don't reject the Edomite, they are your brother. Los sa'eve v'tzri kiger ha'yisach ba'artso. Do not hate or reject an Egyptian. And as the pasuk continues, banim ashi yivaldu lehem dar shlishi, children that they have, third generation, you can marry. So let me get this straight. Egypt is guilty of infanticide. They kill Jewish babies. Egypt enslaves the Jewish people for literally hundreds of years. But they, just wait for generations, come on, you're in. Ammon and Moab in particular, does not offer lechem and mayim, and you're out. You're out forever. I mean, it's like a little bit crazy. And indeed, Rashi says exactly that. Take a look at Sar Sinai, like you can't make this stuff up. Rashi says, Mikol v'kol, don't abhor the Egyptians. Don't reject them entirely. Afal pisha zarku zechorechem layor. Even though they threw your children into the river, still, don't abhor them, don't reject them. Matam, why? Why? So this is amazing. Rashi says, shahayu lachem achsanya b'shas adchak. Because they hosted you when things were tough. When was that? When you were just like a small little family of 70 people, and you didn't have any food to eat. And yeah, Yosef was in Egypt, and it's interesting because we don't give him the credit, we give Egypt the credit. He gave him Haisa. We were once Gabriel. We were once the immigrant. We were once the refugee trying to get into the land of Egypt. And they took care of us. And in order to thank them for that, or really, because we have this innate sense of gratitude that we just, as much as we want to, we cannot strip away. We, in spite of what they have done to us in the meantime, can't forget what they did for us once. Now that is remarkable. And Ammon and Moab is the opposite. Ramban explains that Ammon and Moab come from who? They come from Lot. Right? Ammon and Moab, that's a creepy story. Moab, Moab, the daughter of Lot, daughters of Lot. What was Lot's whole survival plan? I'm a nephew of Abraham. I'm going to get out of the whole Sodom situation because I am a nephew of Abraham. That is going to be enough. And Abraham is the reason that Lot lasts, the reason that he lives, and his children, Ammon and Moab, can't bring a little, what is this? True spring water, a little bit of this? Can't give a little water? Generations later to help the Jews, you know, the Jews who came from Abraham, our cousins, the one who, because of him, Abraham, your life, Lot, you were saved. The ingratitude, the ingrateful, ungrateful nature of Ammon and Moab is why they can't get into the Jewish people. It's that mitzvah, it's that trait of, yeah, I know generations ago, it did me a huge favor. But whatever, it doesn't matter to me anymore. As opposed to Egypt, who did like the worst things in the world to us. And yet, in spite of that, because they were once good to us and we owe them for it, we can't allow ourselves to forget. Look at that contrast between how carefully we treat Egypt, in spite of what they did, and how easily we reject Amun and Moab because of how ungrateful they were historically. If you take a look at verse 12 and 13, and I'm sitting holding this in front of you. Rashi, it's based on a Medrash, talks about how grateful we need to be, and it says, crazy thing. Cheap models understand that. So it says, that was ungrateful. That's a beautiful bottle, delicious water. Sorry about that. Anybody here worry about embarrassing your challah on a Friday night? You know, like you have girl the challah, and you're afraid it's going to be embarrassed. I had a guy at Shir once who, he was like a middle-aged man. This is what became a sad story to me. Middle-aged man. And we're talking about, I don't know what we're talking about, but kiddush and challah and something. And so the halacha is that we cover the challah when we make kiddush. And one of the reasons that's given for wine, you should have heard this at some point in your lifetimes, is because the challah is very embarrassed. Because really, when you have two things to eat, so there's a primacy, there's a sequence of how do you make a bracha. You're supposed to make a bracha on the bread first. But because it's kiddush, and we use wine or baked juice for kiddush, so we do that first. So we cover the bread so like it doesn't feel embarrassed. So this guy, I don't know, I mentioned something about this, like I assumed everybody knew this, and he raised his hand, he's all mad. He says, Rabbi, do you mean to tell me that challahs have feelings? What kind of nonsense is this? He's mad. It's as if, I don't know, somebody did something to him as a kid, some sixth grade Rebbe taught him this, and he's been mad about it for 50 years. And he's literally taking it all out on my class, or my, or whatever's going on. And I said, that is a great question. Let's talk about it at the end. And I said to him, I said, I mean, I never understood this way. I think the rabbis who said this in the Gemara Pesachim, they knew that challahs don't have feelings. They don't. And they knew that. The message, though, of course, is that, you know, we should be so sensitive as to imagine that things have feelings. That's how sensitive we should be. It's not that the challah has feelings. I don't think any human being ever thought that it did. But we have this same exact idea when it comes to gratitude. Where? With Moshe. Moshe is told, God says, you know, you're going to be the one, you're going to bring the makos on the Egyptians, and you're going to take your staff, and you're going to do whatever you're going to do. But not at every mock. At Dam and Kina, we find an interesting thing. In Mar El Aharon, God tells Moshe to speak to Aharon, not Moshe, but Aharon. And you know this, Rashi, you probably learned this as a little kid. Rashi says, Lefi Shehigin Hayar al Moshe, Kishanishmach Lutov. Because the water protected Moshe. There were, after all, the babies. You know, there's evil Egyptians who we allowed to marry people later. Those evil Egyptians, when they were after the babies, so Moshe hid the teva inside the water, you know, to be thankful to the water. So he can't possibly hit that same water and turn it into blood. And you see a couple of makos later, the Emor El Aharon is told, don't hit the dirt. The dirt, when it comes to the lice, don't be involved in the dirt turning to lice, because you owe the dirt. Why do you owe the dirt? Because you know when you kill the Egyptian, and you hit the Egyptian in the dirt, kind of like an ancillary story. It's not really critical to what you did with it. And by the way, he was found out. It didn't even work. But yet, the gratitude that he was supposed to have for dirt and for water, clearly the dirt and the water are cool. They have no emotional ties to either situation. They have a very broad set of experiences, water and dirt. They have no issue with Moshe and his lack of gratitude, but Moshe should. Moshe should be walking around all of his life, he seems, thinking about, you know what, when he sees the Nile River, I remember when I went through, I remember what that water did for me. When he sees the Egyptian dirt and he remembers, like, you know, scrounging around trying to dig a hole to be able to hide the Egyptians so he doesn't get into any trouble, and so no other Jews get persecuted in that moment, he is supposed to be always scanning the world for that dirt. Think about that story, the gratitude that he has for what it did. He's not grateful to the dirt. He's grateful for his life in the story that surrounds the dirt. It's not the challah but it's the sensitivity we need to have even when we're thinking about things like Chava. So this idea of gratitude, the next Makar you've learned before, I guarantee you, somebody told you this, it's this week's Parsha, and that's why this comes up now, because last week was Thanksgiving, and in 3 weeks is Chanukah. It's because this week we have a baby that is born, and that baby is called Thank You. And not only is that baby called Thank You, but we'll see at the end, there's a more significant upshot of this baby being called Thank You. What am I talking about? The fourth child of Leah. Leah has three kids. First, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Reuben, Shimon, and Levi are given names which are actually really awkward, because these names are all about the frustrations that she has in her marriage. Like, I don't know who gave that first speech. Like, what happened? Somebody gets up to do the first speech and says, oh, the reason we named our son Aaron Moshe, Yankel Shmuel, and we're going to be calling him Jason Timothy, or whatever, you've heard these first speeches, I'm sure, before, and gives the speech and says, the reason I'm calling my son Shimon is because I am the hated wife. Awkward, like, you know, the record scratches. What'd you say? So it's really awkward that she calls Reuben, Shimon, and Levi all names that have to do with the frustrations in her marriage. But then she has a fourth child. Hapam, this time I'm cool. Hapam Odes Hashem, this time I will thank Hashem. Al King Kara Shimo Yehuda. Calls him Yehuda because this time I am super grateful. So Rehersh, for example, says, oh, no, all the husband frustrations were good. They were cool. Yaakov and Leah were finally where, you know, she wanted them to be. So there were no more frustrations to express. So this time, names the kid Yehuda instead. Okay, very nice. But you probably are aware of a very well-known one. The Gemara says that Miyom Shavara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esa Olam, source 16, from the day that God created the world, nobody ever thanked God. Nobody ever said thank you. Lo haya adam shahoda lahakadosh baruch hu ad sheba asa Leah v'hodasa. Nobody thanked God until Leah showed up and thanked God. So, come on, tell me, who thanked God? Who do you know that thanked God? 2 weeks ago we read about this. In the Torah, somebody actually goes and thanks God. And it's not the only one. Eliezer, thank you. Eliezer was the one who says, oh my gosh, this whole thing with Rivka and the waters and the camels is amazing. Baruch Hashem, literally thanking God. So, what does the Gemara mean? What does the Gemara mean that she thanked God? Beautiful answers exist. Beautiful, beautiful Torah exists to explain what this means. The most simple and obvious answer is in Rashi, on the page. Rashi says, and you've probably heard this, Rashi says, because she somehow knows that there's supposed to be 12 kids. There's supposed to be 12 good kids, and there's supposed to be 4 wives. So, simple division indicates that you're going to have 12 kids, 4 wives, 3 each. Imagine, she has 4. And in this moment, she doesn't just say thank you. What she is doing, and this is the Gemara's point, she is defining what thank you is. Do you know what thank you is? Thank you is when you pass me something, and you literally didn't have to do that. It was extra. I was not entitled to that child. I was not entitled to you passing me that thing. I don't have a sense of entitlement that everything is coming to me. But rather, all of the things that you do for me, I am so thankful for. Just like Leah was when she had a fourth child, thinking like, oh my God, this is the lottery. This is a bonus child. This is not even something I was supposed to have. Now, we should, of course, say thank you for even things that we think we're supposed to have. I don't know what those things are. But we should also say thank you for those. We should say thank you when people pass us things that, you know, we're owed. But for sure, the Gemara is teaching that the definition of thank you is when we realize that something is extra. When something is coming to me, not because I'm entitled to it, but because you, out of your beneficence, is doing it for me. Your kindness, your consideration for me. That is what thank you, like, really, really is supposed to be. What are the obstacles of thank you? Like, you know, we walk around and we're like, Magi Ali. It's coming to me. I'm entitled to it. Or we say, you didn't do what I did. Kochi Yod Sam Yod. These are the attitudes that get in the way of gratitude. Leia is quite simply laying down the first time thank you is used. It is used in the context of this is extra. And that is what thank you is all about. As a matter of fact, let's just skip 19 and 20 for time. Go to 21. Eliezer, who I mentioned, the first person to in the Torah thank God explicitly. By Yaakov Avraham, I'm sorry, I just totally said the question. Avraham, by Yishtachu Lam Haaretz Lepnei Ches. What's the song at the beginning of Chai Yisar? So he's there to buy burial grounds. There to buy a burial ground, he has to bury his wife somewhere. And he's about to meet this guy named Ephraim, who's going to do a whole little negotiation with him. You read the story. And when this happens, more than one time, he bows to all of the people. Now the deal's not done. The deal's not done. But he's busy bowing. Turn the page, top of the last page. Almost there. Vayikot Abraham Lufay Amharas, he bows once, he bows twice. Says the Medrash, Mikan Shemudin al Besura Tov. From here, we learn we're supposed to say thank you for the good news. The question is obvious. The story's not over. He doesn't yet own the Maharas HaMachpelah. He doesn't yet own the cave. He can't yet bury his wife. Why is he thinking? So, hold on. Maybe just it's an aberration. Maybe it's an anomaly. We go forward to source 23. Just a few chapters later, Eliezer is set to go get away for Yitzhak, and Eliezer devises this test. This test of who's going to be the right wife, and she does, and she checks all the shidduch boxes. It's amazing. And then she comes out. There's only one thing missing. The father, the brother, have not acquiesced. Without that, it's not happening yet. And yet, in source 23, we find the same exact thing. Eliezer, before anything is done, Vayikod ha'ish vayishtachu l'Hashem. He bows down. Says the Medrash, Mikan shemodim al v'surah tovah. From here we see, you say thank you for good news. Same question. Literally, same Medrash, just a different place. And in both stories, we have the identical problem. The story is not over. You haven't actually achieved what you hoped for. You haven't yet secured Rivka as a wife for Yitzchak. You haven't yet gotten Maharas HaMachpelah to be able to bury your wife Sarah. So why are you saying thank you? And that's exactly what the Medrash is teaching. When it comes to saying thank you, when it comes to offering gratitude, there is an activity that is involved. And that activity is not just, you know, waiting for it to happen, waiting for the thing to be finished, and then we have this voila moment. And at that voila moment, that's the moment in which I say thank you. But it seems that the Medrash is teaching us that what really thank you is all about is noticing the steps on the way to the achievement. We're very often busy, like, you know, I can't wait until I graduate. When I graduate, then I'm going to celebrate. But we don't necessarily notice the milestones that are coming on along the way of getting to the places that we need to go. And milestones are entirely up to us. There's this remarkable research about milestones. You know, people, anybody here run a marathon? Good? A full? But you know, not that I don't think you could, right? What was I going to say there? In Israel? Okay. So when you run a marathon, so you could go like for 6 hours, 10 hours, it'd take a very long time. So very often, if you look at a chart of marathon finishing times, so you find these spikes on the chart. Those spikes are found at 2.5 hours, and then 3 hours, and then 3.5 hours, and then 4 hours. We, as marathon runners, have arbitrarily decided that we are going to say 4 hours. I want to finish 26.2 miles, a pretty arbitrary amount of space, in a very particular amount of time. 4 hours, or 3.5 hours. We make milestones. We do this all the time. Birthdays, like, I don't know, birthdays a thing. 20, 30, 35, 18. We decide what birthdays are meaningful. They're just steps along the process towards a thing. They almost are never representative of the finality of a thing, but we choose to make those moments incredibly meaningful. And I think that these midrashim are telling us is that we have to do the same thing when it comes to gratitude. I know that you have not secured the burial plot, and I also know that you have not secured the wife for Yitzhak. But hello, do you know the first thing is just figuring out who the girl might be? That's a big deal. Being able to, like, you know, engender yourself and figure out a way to talk to these people who are living around this cave, you know, that's a stage. That's also worthy of gratitude. And so, number one, we know gratitude is about not feeling entitled. But it's not only about that. It's about acknowledging the things that are not just the big, impressive moments in our life. Oh, yeah, that I'll be grateful for. But I'm not there yet. you know, it's not just the finishing of the class, taking the final and celebrating that the class was done. I don't know, I had a really good day, and I took notes today, the entire class, and I didn't space out at all. I was able to concentrate from the beginning to the end. I am so grateful that I was able to pull that off. Those little tiny celebrations, we're the ones who decide whether or not they're meaningful or not. We decide the steps of gratitude. And the reason that this is so important, and the reason, you know, I started with all this research about journaling, is because when we start to do this, I saw this amazing TED talk years ago, that these positive psychology people have been testing human beings who, and I can't explain why this is, for 21 days, for 3 weeks, not what this whole book is about, for 21 days, you write down three things a day, that you are grateful for. And if you do that, what's going to happen is something remarkable. So the first 3 days, you know, you're going to be very busy with the big ticket items. I'm so happy, you know, I got a family, I got a house, I got a car. I don't know what you're happy for. Hopefully, you know, everybody has some basic things that we're happy for. By day 4, 5, 6, then you're sort of scrounging around. You're trying to, what am I happy for now? I'm really happy. I have a bag. It's black. It matches everything. And, you know, you're trying to think of like all the things that, no, I'm happy for that too. And you're sort of training yourself to scan the world and find good stuff. You're training yourself to be able to like look around and see the positive in things, as opposed to what we're generally busy with, complaining and touching and cynical and ew. It literally changes the way it seems. I'm not an expert, but this is what I read. It changes the way your neurons connect. The way you actually perceive the universe changes when you're able to do this for 3 weeks. So I'm going to share with you something, and I would suggest you do it. I do this all of the time with classes that I have. Because we have this incredible tool in Judaism that we probably don't notice. And the reason we don't notice it is because we're very busy this night doing a lot of different things. There's one night of the year that we play act, we role play. What night am I talking about? We ask questions and answers, the Seder. So the Seder, a lot going on. Not only that, we just had 4 cups of wine. I mean, it's a really, you know, it's a little bit, everybody's a little bit swimming the night of the Seder. But there's something that happens when nobody has any patience and everybody is just very busy singing that, like, we gloss over. And to me, it is one of the most magical things that we do. And that is dying. Okay? What do I mean? So if you're Sephardic, so there's this custom to hit people with scallions. After the class, please tell me where that's from. I want to understand it because I find it to be fantastic and awesome. I don't know why scallions, I don't know why people are hitting each other, but it seems like lots of fun. But if you've ever said dying, so you know how it goes, right? Elu, Elu, should you sing it? Okay, you're not going to sing it. But take a look at the box on the left, on the last page. Fun fact. Okay, how many amazing things. You know, the Seder night's not about gratitude. It's also about gratitude. It's about certain theological things that we learned on the night, God's involvement with the Jewish people. It's just a Pesach, Matzah, Maror. It's not really just about gratitude. But there's this one little song about gratitude. If only you had taken us out of Egypt, and you had done miracles and judged the people who had enslaved us for all that time, meaning even if we would have just gone out, but there would not have been any justice, it would have been pretty good. If there had been justice, but you didn't demolish their gods, make the point that there's only one true God, that would have been enough. If you had demolished their gods, but you didn't deal with the firstborn, it would have been enough. So like, it's a cute song, but I want you to think about what this song is. I'm going to tell you a story. But before I do, I want you to think of like the best day you had in a long time. Today, I know, right now, amazing. Yeah, what's the best day you had in a long time? Think about it to yourself. Think about like a day you hung out with your family or friends. You did something really cool. It was great. It was like a whole long day. So I'm going to tell you a quick story. I'll tell you about my greatest day. One of my greatest. Okay, I went to a football game with a bunch of friends. But that's not all that happened. First, we got together for bagels. We got together for bagels in the morning at Bagel Mensch. You know, some people know Bagel Mensch out here. And the bagels were delicious. I mean, fresh, and fantastic babies, great, great babies. And we had a great time, like, oh, our friend tells a bunch of really funny jokes, like, yeah, Taylor, we were laughing, great. And then we got to the car, and my friend had a convertible, and really was really cool, you know, the music was blasting, you know, the feeling, went through hair back in the day, and it was really, really, really good, really great. And we got to the game. And if you know football games, I have football games like a tailgate party in the parking lot. So much fun. The tailgate party was amazing. It was amazing. Because there were these kosher guys grilling, Jewish guys. I don't know if they were kosher, but they were Jewish, and they were grilling in the parking lot, and there was more food. And who doesn't like more food? And they were playing football in the parking lot. It was so much fun. Fun guys. Great. We get into the game. Turns out we had these great seats. And there was a high-scoring game, so there was a lot of action on the field. And then the game got exciting, and there was a great halftime show. And it was just all exciting the entire time. After the game, there's more tailgating, because our team won, the Giants won. It was so, so exciting. We're hanging out there again, these Jewish guys, and having another football game in the parking lot. It's like late at night already, and we said, you know what, we haven't eaten enough. Let's go out to eat in the city. We drive to the city, we go out to eat, great time at dinner, and finally, after a long day, after a long, really fun day, go home, go to sleep, and then somebody asks you the next day. Imagine that happens to you. Somebody asks you the next day and says, so what did you do yesterday? What do you say? Went to the football game. Was it good? Yeah, it was good. I mean, look, that's the extent. That's the extent. That's what we do. We wrap up like all of these really amazing moments, and we do pretty much nothing with them. You know, we have this incredible time. What do we do with it? So what does Diana teach us to do? So I'm going to do a little Diana on my day. If I'd only gone to bagels with my friend, and I hadn't had that incredible car ride, it really would have been enough. And if I only had the car ride, and we would have gone in circles, and I wouldn't have ever gotten to the tailgate, it would have been enough. If we would have gone to the tailgate, and I didn't get into the stadium, we still had such a good time, it would have been enough. If the stadium, like, if we would have lost the game, but at the same time, it was a high-scoring and really exciting game, it would have been enough. If I would have won the game, we didn't have the tailgate party afterwards, it would have been enough. If I only had the tailgate party afterwards, and I did go out to dinner in the city, it would have been enough. And so you take the entire story of C4UTS and Triumph, a lot of things happen. A lot of things happen. And it's a sort of skill to chop shop up the car and turn it into its component parts, and try to figure out how to look at a big story in a small way and how to find gratitude from like the little things. And so what I used to do in high school, I can't do it in college for some reason, I don't know why, but in high school I used to assign this. And so there are some kids in this room, and some young women, excuse me, I'm just saying kids, in this room who were in these classes when I made them do it. This is not from any of you. Some kids, like I assigned, you must write a Dayenu. I'm sorry, running out of time. You must write a Dayenu. I would assign this, and some kids would write about anything. You can write about anything, whatever you want. And so, if my car only had a sunroof and it didn't have leather seats, it would have been enough. If it only had leather seats, but all right, fine, thank you. If I would have only had pants but no shirt, it would not have been enough. But whatever. And then I had a kid once. I just gotta share this. It was a long time ago, two schools ago. If Hashem would have brought me to high school and didn't let me make good friends, that would have been enough. Hashem made me make good friends, helped me get good friends, and had not boosted my confidence, it would have been enough. Hashem would have helped me boost my confidence and not become less shy, it would have been enough. If Hashem would have let me become less shy and not have developed my public speaking skills, that would have been enough. And he goes on and on and on. And I remember the first time I read this, I knew nothing about this kid. And I'm looking at this guy, wow, it's amazing. To be able to isolate the gifts that we feel like we've received over the course of time, like we are so, oh, I had an amazing experience. High school was great. What was great though? Do we notice the Eliezer moments, the Abraham moments? Are we Vayikod Ha'am Vayishtachu? Like, do we bow down in the middle of the story to stop and say, hey, I wasn't entitled to this. This is like extra. This is extra. When we try to scan the world for our little, you know, gratitude things that we want to put in our journal, are we focused and obsessed with the things that we don't yet have? Are we focused on the things that we're like trying to get? Or are we overwhelmed with like the little things that we already have? The things that we just never stop to take apart and notice. I would recommend everybody write a Dayenu. That's like the best way to do a gratitude journal. Just Dayenu every day. It would have been enough. So much that I have. any one of those little elements, I think I could focus on, it would have been enough. If I would have just had my annoying little brother, and I didn't have my other annoying little sister, it would have been enough. You know, when we try to do this and break it down, and break our lives down into our component parts, it becomes so easy to find the grateful life, and to really thank you for a better life. So I just want to close with 23. If you read it in English, it is up to us to be able to execute this. It is up to us to cultivate a remembrance of gratitude. It doesn't happen on its own. You don't become grateful people. Abraham Odeh Hashem calls Yehuda grateful, and then from Yehuda comes a David HaMelech, comes a Daniel, comes all the people who like do amazing things in the world, who write Tehillim. This is what the Midrashim point out about Leah's legacy of gratitude. But the most important thing, we are all Yehuda. The Midrash says, you know, we're all Jewish here, you know, why you and stuff like that. Verse 26, with the last verse, and with this I'll let you go. Yehuda ata yoducha achecha. Yaakov tells Yehuda on his deathbed, he says, you will be acknowledged amongst your brothers. Says the Midrash, Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai, you call achecha nikra'in al shemecha. All of your brothers will be called by your name. Amazing. Indeed true. We are all called Yehudim. We are all called Jews. We are all called after the person who is named thank you. If there is one midah that defines us, or that should define us, that can cultivate, as it says on the cover, our closer to God relationship, if there's one midah that is going to change our lives and make us much happier people, we'll get another half hour of sleep. I don't even know how that works. But we'll get another half hour of sleep, that is going to be the midah